Hello, and welcome back to the Dive and Dig podcasts. In this episode, we bring you more fascinating research recently presented at the Under the Mediterranean Conference held in Malta. We hear about three very different shipwreck sites, all discovered in the Mediterranean. First up, my colleague Kathy speaks to Peter Campbell about his work surveying the site of a famous naval battle, the Battle of the Egede Islands, that occurred over 2,000 years ago in 241 BC between the Romans and the Carthaginians. Rarely do archaeologists find clues about ancient warfare, so Peter and his team's discoverers provide valuable insight into the battle scene, the boats, and evidence for their crews. He also talks about the high-tech methodologies that are being used to map this huge area of seabed.
Hi, Peter. Welcome. Thank you. Tell me more who you are and tell me more about what you're doing.
So I am Dr. Peter Campbell, and I'm a lecturer at Cranfield University. And my research examines an ancient naval battle that was found off the coast of Sicily, the Battle of the Egede Islands, which occurred on March 10th, 241 BC.
And what have you found there so far?
Well, the project's been going on for quite some time, since 2005, and it began by mapping the seafloor, covering 270 square kilometers, and within that, we've started finding elements of a naval battle. So all of the organic remains in the Mediterranean get eaten quite quickly by biological creatures, but we're finding all the inorganic artifacts made of stone or ceramic or metal.
Okay, and what are those artifacts?
The most impressive things that were found are these large bronze rams, and so they would have fit on the front of the warships and they'd be used to smash into enemy vessels and cause them to sink.
Okay, so the rams, but then what? I mean, they must have had more than just rams on these ships.
Yes, these ships would have carried large crews, and in the case of this battle specifically, they're carrying cargo to try and reinforce the Carthaginian army that was in Sicily. So we started looking at the cargo that was being transported, which is a really interesting element because this is the first naval battle that's been found, so we can really get a sense of what was put on board these ships.
Because they couldn't have had too much on board. They needed the people, didn't they? Is that what they...
Right.
Explain that.
You would have had a large crew of oarsmen because these ships were propelled by oar. So you would have had several hundred individuals on board each ship rowing these vessels. Plus, you would have had a contingent of marines that would have fought other marines on other vessels, on the enemy ships, and then you would have had the crew that was steering and controlling the vessel as well. So you're talking about hundreds of people on each ship.
Wow. And, okay, so did they have amphora? Did they have armor? Did they have weapons of other types?
So what we've been finding is thousands of amphora that are scattered on the seafloor in amongst these warship elements. Which makes us think that these are probably goods, foodstuffs that were being transported to the Carthaginian army on mainland Sicily. So the ancient historian Polybius gives a really vivid account of this battle, and he describes how the Carthaginian fleet was trying to reprovision their army in Sicily. And so probably what we're seeing with all these amphoras are the transport containers used to carry grain, maybe olive oil, that sort of thing, from North Africa, where Carthage is based, to Sicily, where the army was fighting.
Right, and when you found them, were they scattered, or were they, how did you find them?
Well, when we find merchant ships carrying amphoras, they're usually still stacked in rows, and you can kind of see the shape of the ship in the amphoras. But here we have the amphoras scattered over 10 square kilometers. They're just scattered over an enormous area, really far apart, you know, 20 meters or more apart from each other. So it's very different from what we see on merchant ships. And so this might reflect how amphoras were transported and stowed on board warships, that as these ships broke apart on the surface during the battle, the amphoras would spread out and then slowly sink.
So have you been mapping them to understand this sort of complexion of remains?
We've been using a variety of kind of high-tech methods, from autonomous robots to remotely operated robots. to using divers, using tech diving skills and equipment to map this area. So we're using kind of a variety of different high-tech methods to slowly map out this battle that's spread over just an enormous area.
How long have you been working on this?
Well, the project started in 2005, but I joined in 2010, so it'll be the 12th season this year that I've been working on the project.
And was Professor Tusa involved at all?
Yeah, so the project was started by Sebastiano Tusa, who is the Soprintendente del Mare for Sicily for many years. And he started the project. The Battle of the Agate Islands was very famous, and he knew about it growing up. And then a fisherman was caught by the Carabinieri trying to traffic one of these bronze rams out of the country. And this prompted him to start this big collaborative project that's now been going on for nearly two decades.
Wow. And where next, or what next, should I say?
The next steps are to better define the area of the battle. So we feel like we've defined the battle to the north and to the east, but we're still following the concentration artifacts down to the south and out to the west. So there's a lot to do, probably generations of work still to do on this site, because it's just so enormous and there's so much material to study.
Fantastic. Well, good luck. It sounds fascinating.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Such an amazing and unique site, and surveying over 270 square kilometres is quite a challenge. So, next up, we head to Croatia. My colleague Lauren speaks to Irine Radic-Rossi about the Santa Jeronimo, a 16th century wreck discovered off the coast of Croatia. A remarkably well-preserved merchant ship identified through archival research. Irina tells us more about what they found on the ship and what we have learned about ship building from the hull remains.
Right, excellent. So now we're headed to sunny Croatia, and I'm here with Irina. Could you just introduce yourself firstly for me?
So I'm Irena Radic-Rossi from the University of Zadar. I'm a maritime archaeologist, and I work in maritime archaeology since I graduated.
Amazing. And you work on some absolutely stunning sites. But the one we're going to talk about today, which we've just heard in one of the sessions here, is the Santo Jeronimo wreck, which, I mean, you could probably talk about that site for a couple of hours, couldn't you? Because it's such an amazing assemblage and ship and everything like that. But could you, if possible, give us a sort of a summary of what was found and what we know so far?
We have the nicely preserved port side of the big merchantman. That has been actually identified in 1980s by Stjepan Vekarić, who found the document in the archives saying that this is the ship Santo Jeronimo, Nava Santo Jeronimo, actually, that sunk in 1576, and it belonged to a rich merchant from Dubrovnik, Jerolim Primojević, or Jerolim de Primi.
Brilliant. Yeah, that was really interesting, seeing that archive document.
So they actually on the shipwreck they recovered some coins that were the most important for the dating, but also a number of pottery and metal objects. They also recovered the steelyard bar and some cokes and other stuff like this. So it was a very interesting repertoire of objects, but what we are actually interested in is the hull, because the hull of Santo Jeronimo does not belong to the Venetian shipbuilding tradition. It is fully lead sheeted up to the waterline, so that was the protection used at that time, but it was never used in Venice. And it was maybe used by, it was certainly used by Spaniards. And as we know that Dubrovnik had great friendship relationship with Spain, we actually assume that it is under the Spanish influence. So the ship could have been built in some Dubrovnik shipyard, but it also could have been built in Naples, for example, or it could have been bought from some other shipyard as well. We are just let's say, at the beginning of our study, because we reached the center of the hull, but just along the keel, and there is still a lot to be discovered.
Yeah, so, I mean, in terms of proportions, what's the sort of rough length of the hull that's surviving on the seabed?
It must have been the ship of the size of about 30 to 35 meters. I cannot estimate the total length of the preserved part of the hull because we reached the midship, as I said, so we reached the master frame area. We still have to dig to understand how long are the wooden remains that we have on the seabed.
Oh, amazing. And I suppose you haven't got to this bit yet, but is there any evidence of the lead sheathing on the seabed still? Because I know that's a really...
Lead sheathing is beautifully preserved. So you can study the lead sheathing in the bow area where the wood is missing, and you can also study it on the starboard side of the ship, because the starboard side is completely destroyed. It consists of scattered elements of the hull, and underneath there are these long sheets of lead that are over 2 meters long and around 60 centimeters wide. So those are really impressive. One of my students did her graduate thesis on this sheeting and concluded that those were the largest sheets found up to now in the world.
Wow, oh, that's amazing. I hadn't realized that. Something else that stood out to me was that you said that you didn't find any armaments on the vessel, and that in the archive, I think it was the archive, that some Greek divers had been paid to go down and recover some of the armaments. And we're talking 16th century, you know, people were diving, doing salvage work.
Exactly. No, the document that identified the shipwreck speaks about this. So it is the document from the beginning of the 17th century, where three Greek divers offer their help in raising and recovering the bronze guns from the shipwreck site, and they claimed the amount of money for this. It is the 17th century, but the first document that was traced by Stepan Vekaric belongs to the 14th century. So it is the practice that that lasts since antiquity, for sure.
Yeah, amazing. That is amazing. And it's really nice to see that combination of looking at historical sources and the maritime archaeology, and it all coming together to make this story.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing, because when you manage to identify your shipwreck in the archives, that's a bingo, because then you just have to continue the research and find other documents that speak about this ship.
Yeah, so you could probably explore its trade patterns and that kind of thing, perhaps by finding where it went. And
you can actually recover the whole story of the ship, because that's the situation that we have on another shipwreck from the second half of the 16th century. This is Galliana Grossa, that sunk near the island of Gnalic in 1583. And we recovered the whole story from the beginning to the end.
Oh, yeah, that's another amazing shipwreck. I'd love to talk about that. But thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And good luck. I guess you're going out again next year to the site, are you?
We hope in financial support, of course, and based on this information, we will plan the future actions, but hopefully we will be on the site in 2023.
Oh, well, good luck. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
This is a great example of how a combination of archaeology and archival research has led to the identification of the site, revealing the full story. Finally, in this episode, Lauren speaks to Letizia Cavassa about the Marat de Gien, a Roman shipwreck discovered off the south coast of France. First found in the 1970s, the team are revisiting archival documentation from the original excavations in order to apply new techniques to better understand the ship and its cargo.
Okay, so we're coming towards the end of the first day of the conference now, and this morning we were hearing about a really exciting shipwreck that was found about 50 years ago now, but where the team have been using archival data to better understand the ship and the cargo. So if you could just introduce yourself for us.
Yes. So, good morning. My name is Laetitia Cavassa. I'm French. And I'm working for the Centre National de la Recherche Scientifique, for the laboratory calling the Centre Camille Julien in Aix-en-Provence, in the south of France.
Very lovely place to work, I can imagine. Yeah, thank you. So this particular shipwreck, I'm not going to say it because I won't do it justice. Could you just tell us the name of the wreck?
Yes, this shipwreck is calling La Madrague de Gien. And the name is linked to the place of discovering in the south of France, in the city calling Hier, and in the precise place of La Madrague and the peninsula of Gien. So it's La Madrague de Gien.
And it's a Roman wreck, is that right?
So, yes.
Yes. Okay, excellent. So, from your presentation, that the main sort of elements that you were covering were how this shipwreck was recorded for over a period, was it 10 years, from 1972 to 82, I believe. And you're now using some of that data to redo photogrammetry of the site, essentially. Is that right?
It was the first day of excavation was in July 1972. And it was conducted by André Tchernia, Patrice Pommet, and Antoinette Hénard. And 3 years ago, with my colleague Pierre Poveda, who is working on the Centre Camille Julien and is a specialist of naval architecture, we begin this program to complete the study and the excavation made by our predecessors with we talk to that with them first, mm-hmm. and they help us a lot, Patrice Pommet and André Tchernia, to work. And the idea was to complete all the data for studying the ship and the cargo. So we worked on the archives.
Archives.
Yeah,
the archives, yeah.
Too difficult, archives. because we have a very important collection of archives of this excavation, with the diaries excavation, the photos, and everything. Mm-hmm. And during the excavation, they made a photogrammetry of the shipwreck, and with these pictures, which are not digital, we make the digitization of all the collection, and we try to make a modern, or actual, not modern, but a photogrammetry with our.
Yeah, current software.
Yes.
And and it was really nice to see the images of that ship. So it looked like there was a mixed cargo on there, wasn't there? Can you tell us a bit about the cargo of the?
Yes. So the main cargo was made with 1,000 of amphora.
Amazing.
From Italy, from South Italy. It's amphora for wine. And the secondary cargo was cooking pots, Italian cooking pots, very common, and blackware pottery from South Italy too, from the produced in the near between Naples and Rome. Mm-hmm. And when we begin this work, we understand quickly that. When they published the book in 1978, the only real book of the shipwreck, they published just a little part of the cargo and of the collection of the pottery. So now we complete all this part who was unpublished, because with the diaries we know that they labeled more than 14,000 wow. objects found in the during the excavation, during these 10 years of excavation. So we could complete all the parts that they can't do first.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because in that period, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, a lot of shipwrecks were being recorded and excavated. And we've got all this legacy data, this archive data. And the same for, you know, Anna Frost's Punic ship. She took a lot of photos of that. And I just think it's really interesting going back to that data now to see how we can use modern technology and modern software to now create these photogrammetric models, which help not only with research and better understanding the site, but also with outreach and showing the site to people. Yes. So that's really
it was our first voluntary wish. Yeah. Our first wish to do that, to work with all their data, but not to say it was wrong, just to complete what they can't do first.
And maybe in 50 years' time there'll be new software and we can keep adding to it, which is great. And and where's the ship now? Was it fully excavated?
No, it's not fully excavated. They let a part, not excavated, and now it's well protected. And well, it's like that. But all the material is conserve in a big storage.
Okay, great. Oh, that's it's a cool site, and I think it just shows the potential of what we can do with historical data, but also keeping that information, like you say, part of the site's protected. So as we advance our technology, we can go back and revisit the site and add even more to it. So no, it's great. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
That's so cool. I'm really excited by this project, and it just shows what you can do with archival documentation. Well, unfortunately, that's it from the Dive and Dig podcast this week, brought to you from the Anna Frost Foundation, a charity that preserves and promotes maritime archaeology in the Eastern Mediterranean. We will be back soon to reveal new, exciting discoveries from the deep.